Ryan.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
You know, I've been better.
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty emotional myself. Almost like I'm saying goodbye to a dear and valued friend. Someone who's been there from season two. That's how I'm feeling.
I just don't know how we're going to live.
Can we even say that we're yum yum? Can we say that we're num num? Like we're numb to the fact that Nan has left the show now? Oh, how are we going to get past this, Rach?
Well, I think the first hurdle is to do the full intro.
Yep, sure.
Okay, we are the Yum Yum Podcast and we are rewatching Star Trek Discovery, and we are currently about to have our discussion regarding Die Trying.
Yeah, you have to look at it to double check. These episodes are very memorable titles. Die Trying, it really relates.
Season 3, Episode 5, IMDb offers this description. After reuniting with what remains of Starfleet and the Federation, the USS Discovery and its crew must prove that a 930-year-old crew and starship are exactly what this future needs. And it's one of the highest rated episodes of this season.
It is the highest rated episode, I'm pretty sure, of the best season, according to everyone, of Star Trek Discovery. Yet it is one that, let me use my memory, doesn't even crack above a 7.5.
It is a 7.3.
There you go. Highest rated episode of the best season, apparently.
Dysfunction is the team.
We've just accepted it.
No, we haven't.
So, Rachel, Die Trying is the episode in which Commander Nan, the engineer and security chief,
we say farewell.
We say goodbye.
Her, and she is trying to rejoin with
the Barzans,
her people.
Her people that we care so much about.
And that we know that she cares deeply about, and that she really regrets that she didn't get to go home one last time before leaping into the future.
Instead of the Huda this week, can we have a brief Nanda in which we talk about Nan's contributions to this episode, which is she let Michael convince the guy at the end to do the right thing, which was to let Nan stay behind and do the right thing. And, you know, Nan really, really reminded us and Michael that Michael is really the main character of every story,
and, Michael,
and that she's
Michael
the most important.
Michael is the only one that can do anything.
Yep.
Other people can try, but then Hugh has to come in and tell her, no, Michael, it has to be you.
I'm so glad.
It has to be you. It can only be you.
You're the chosen one. So we said goodbye to Nan in this, and which is going to tie perfectly into our relationship and history with the episode. I'll jump in first. I remembered being gobsmacked that they got rid of Nan in this because, foolishly, I thought that they were going to give her a character because she's been there since season two and they put that actress in the intro credit sequence this season. I thought maybe we'd actually utilize having a security chief officer because the first one got brutally murdered by a tardigrade, but they got rid of her and that was surprising, but not really because this show is filled to the brim with characters and there's just not enough room and not enough time to flesh any of them out. So why not just eject a couple and introduce a couple more? I'm sounding very harsh, but my first opinion on this episode was I enjoyed it, Rachel. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was anything amazing. It kind of reminded me of a season one episode of Discovery in which it felt like it had the potential to be one thing and then it drastically changed into another thing. Reminds me of Context is for Kings in a lot of ways, in which it starts out as one thing and then shoves in another thing at the end that would have been an episode of its own. But I didn't feel as negatively as I did towards Contexts for Kings when I watched this one. I thought this one was pleasant. I thought the stakes were at a reasonable enough level. Oh, let's save these people who are being poisoned. Oh, there's a, you know, a,
yeah, and it's
a
not,
seed
it's not
ship
an
and
entire
all
planet of refugees. It's
yeah,
like,
it's a group of
we
people.
We only see like five or six of them in.
Yeah, and I
this weird kind of gallery sick bay that's underneath the floor of the main area for some reason.
It's called visual storytelling. I appreciated that the crew of the Discovery and Michael Burnham had to prove their abilities and their loyalties and their just generally prove themselves to the people of the future and to the Starfleet and Federation of the future by doing something relatively small and mundane, something very Star Trek-y. It wasn't, let's save the galaxy today.
Let's go on an away mission. There is one clear objective,
yeah,
and things get in the way of it, and I think they meant for Michael to learn something.
Well, she kind of does, kind of doesn't. It's a part of her ongoing arc of feeling out of place this season. What did you think of the episode when it first aired? What was your general thoughts on it?
I remember being bored.
Mm.
That's the main thing that I remember, and being like, why is this episode called Die Trying?
Because they're going to die trying to save the Federation.
Yeah, like they're willing to die trying. But usually, like, you know, you would want that a title to link to both the A and the B plot.
And this probably does, but you just didn't find the episode's stories effective enough for you to even care how the title ties in.
No, no, it wasn't quite that. I saw how they thought it connected.
Ah, yes, the
but
classic.
When you give it more than 2 seconds thought, you're kind of like, but is it though?
This week's episode of Star Trek Discovery was so amazing as the Disco crew made contact with the new Federation.
What did you think of Die Trying, watching it?
It was still pretty boring. It felt even more Star Trek Discovery than it did on the first watch.
And what does that mean?
It means that there is the plot of two episodes smushed together, but I know that they were never planned to be two episodes. They're just two plots that they crammed into one because exploring ideas is not what Star Trek Discovery does.
We don't have time.
We don't have time for the metaphysics. We need the spectacle.
I thought that this episode wasn't great upon the rewatch. It brought up several issues that I've already been having with Star Trek Discovery and in this season. And I looked at it and I said to myself, I'll never watch this episode again. This is the highest rated episode of the season? Really? Okay. I felt the pacing was absolutely all over the place. Too fast, too slow. It did feel like two episodes smashed into one another.
In classic Discovery fashion. I did not get as frustrated by that because at this point,
no.
I've accepted that that's the way that they like to structure their episodes.
And I understand that. But even with the previous episodes we've discussed,
still hope for better.
In the previous episodes of this season, they haven't had that as strongly. They've been pretty much, this is the episode. We've had problems, like with People of Earth and with the first episode. But those ones didn't feel like the season two, season one, where they smashed two or three episode plot ideas into one, and none of them are sustained long enough to really feel worth the time or effort or energy to see it on screen. The Saru episode where he has to go to the tavern and the stuff happening with parasitic guys in episode two, both of those went long enough. I felt like they were part of one episode. This is one where I just go, okay, we got a seed ship at the back half of this, which feels like a rejected Enterprise script episode. And we got the first half, which is more so tying into the overarching narrative plot of finding the Federation. We found the Federation, and now the Federation is and Starfleet, and they're questioning us about who we are, what we want, where we're from, all of this information. They want to debrief, they want to take over the Discovery ship and replicate the Spore Drive, all this stuff. And those two plots, the debrief from the Federation and Starfleet and let's save a spaceship, don't really feel like they should be in the same episode because they're on drastically different ends of importance, but they are.
Admiral, you have a crew ready and able to fly now. You're going to waste precious time teaching a new crew the ins and outs of a 1,000-year-old ship flying through a mushroom network?
What's your tone, Commander? You're not home yet.
I did feel an instant disconnect with this episode because at the end of the last one, we were told, okay, this is where the Federation is located. Let's go there. But in the interim of that episode and this one, the crew of the Discovery, Saru and co, have had communications with Starfleet and the Federation and have already done the chit-chat, which I feel like we definitely should have seen on screen. That's a moment.
I would love to see it.
That's a moment. More important, like really important, but it's happened off screen. Again, lots of things happen off screen this season. Like, remember that episode where Michael and Book save the day off screen? This is another one where it's like, we should have seen that call on screen, or it should not have happened, and it should have only happened when they physically got there. So then you have, but instead in
but
this
Ryan,
episode, but wait,
we need that time to show a flying rainforest.
We do, but instead, the joy that the audience would have of seeing our crew of characters get to interact with Starfleet for the first time since season two, to actually properly get to meet a fully functioning version of, instead of that guy in the first episode who was insane and he sat there for 40 years. To actually get to see it and be awed by it and talk to them, like, finally, that is undercut by the episode spending the first 10 minutes saying, yeah, we already talked to them on the phone, and it seems pretty chill and cool. And when they do rock up to the Starfleet headquarters, they aren't that wowed by anything because they already know what the situation is. And one of the main plot points is Michael saying, we should find out further what the situation is. And at the end of the episode, they do, which is the Admiral says, you know as much about the burn as we do. And thus, they and us, the audience, don't progress or learn anything further. So what's the excitement there? Again, immediate disconnect because they start off the episode by saying, we've already had the bit of contact with the Federation and Starfleet, the thing that you would actually want to see in the episode.
And the thing that they were building
towards.
Up, particularly the last episode, they were just like, in Hugh's opening monologue with his log, he's
from
just like,
episode.
The words that are keeping everybody going are,
when we find Starfleet.
When we find the Federation.
When we find the Federation.
And then it is kind of an interesting idea that Vance says, you're not home yet. And then he does eventually say that they are home when they've proven themselves.
Yeah.
And that idea is interesting.
Yeah.
But we don't like the way that it's played out. And it's frustrating because there are pieces here.
I often ask myself when moments like this happen, where they have the characters say, hey, we had all this off screen, and they spend 10 minutes talking about how they've talked to people instead of just doing it on screen for us. And I wonder why. And I think, oh, that's right. Star Trek Discovery has a real issue for some reason with show don't tell. They hate that. But. It really does feel like they just hate doing the talky scenes as well, where we talk about Star Trek Discovery likes exposition all the time, but they don't like to have these kind of talking scenes in which we would rather have seen that scene, us two, than the glory shots of Voyager J and them going, Voyager J? us 11 versions of that. Can't wait to hear those stories. Or did you know that ship's called Nog because that character Nog from Deep Space Nine and the actor died? Like, that stuff's great little fan servicey stuff. Whatever. But as someone who wants to see the episode, and the whole season thus far has been when we find the Federation and when we talk to the Federation and they do the thing off screen already, It's not satisfying. And I go, why is Star Trek Discovery afraid of doing these things? And then I remember they're lazy and they're not the things that Star Trek Discovery think is important. Star Trek Discovery thinks the spectacle of there's a rainship forest ship is more important than seeing them phone home.
That's a flying rainforest.
We mentioned they show the glory shots of the new starships. I had a problem with them because a lot of them are partially obscured by lens flares, random blurring. They're shown from very far away or they're very small on the view screen. And it's kind of a way to hide the budgetary constraints of it, because we know from Star Trek Picard, they had a real hard time having enough CGI money to spend on their spaceships, where they just control seed them a million times, and then in the final episode of Star Trek Picard just use stock footage and just put the Starfleet logo on stock footage, which was really funny. So the idea of seeing these glorious ships, and yet you feel like you don't actually really get to see them. Like, they said the line, the Voyager J, she has detached nacelles, where do the warp cores go? I couldn't even tell It had detached nacelles. I couldn't tell you that because it's shot to not show you things properly because they don't have the money.
We don't get that 360 view. And it's weird.
We don't get that 5-minute scene of them on a little shuttlecraft driving towards it with a TNG theme playing.
I still didn't manage to spot the Nog properly.
No.
I only know that because of the trivia. They stop and look at the Voyager a little bit longer. And I still don't understand why it's a discussion of it being 10 or 11. And
why do they even care?
Tilly not being able to count by regulations. And
well, she's only using the power of math, people.
Yeah. And, you know, she's going to be acting first officer.
And she's an engineer, yeah.
In like an episode or two, and she doesn't know how naming of Starfleet ships
works. She doesn't know where J is in the alphabet. One of the interesting things here that I want to discuss is...
Well, alphabet's not numbers.
Yes, so. But she doesn't know. She should still know this because she's supposed to be more smart than us. But... one of the things I want to discuss is that moment there and a few other moments is critical of a flaw we have with Discovery, which is they will go out of their way to go against what the scene or characters are for the sake of a joke, a dramatic sting, a twist, or whatever it is. In that moment, Tilly is made to be dumb because they want to have a funny moment. But
she's so excited she can't even think her sentence through before she speaks, which in a way it could be justified as it's, well, like, oh, she's just fangirling over the ship so hard she's reverted back to season one where she just babbles when she's nervous.
But it still doesn't, it goes against the character that we have.
It goes against what she is now and the way that we see her respond to stressful situations and excitement very differently post her experiences being Captain Killy.
Yeah.
Because that really did shift a lot of aspects within Tilly's character.
Yeah, and another thing to prove, again, to go to this scene is the writers and the show want the reference of Voyager J. Voyager and J. Janeway, of course. Voyager, Voyager. But it goes against the characters because they all react to it like, Voyager? Oh my god, Voyager? Voyager wasn't a ship in their era. Voyager's a ship after them. It doesn't mean anything to them, but they're reacting to it like it does, because I, as the audience, it means something to me because I've seen Star Trek Voyager before.
And
but they don't know. They don't have any relationship to it. So what does it matter?
The Voyager that made me go, ah, Voyager! Oh my god! Like, that was so cool.
To continue on talking about Voyager, I know what that is. If they're going to make the reference to Voyager and say, there's a Voyager,
It's become a legacy ship.
Jay, like Janeway, you get the reference. If you're going to do that as a show, this is what I have a real issue with, and not just Discovery, but many other shows and movies. If you're going to do the reference, you have to follow through on the material that you're referencing in that manner, because later in this one, we meet what holograms are in the future. And one of the most important, vital things that Star Trek Voyager added to the Star Trek tapestry is holograms and how they became more than just a holodeck program and just a joke situation.
Ryan,
They became important.
They acknowledge it, Ryan, because, you know, Voyager has the EMH.
Emergency medical hologram, yes.
And one of the holos in this one is Eli. And because Eli, like EMH, but just with the letters moved around a little bit.
Different letters. And what does it stand for?
His name's Eli.
And he wears a bow tie.
And he has a distorted voice to remind you that he's a holo.
And that is where I have an issue. I love Voyager. And one of the reasons I love Voyager is because one of my favorite sci-fi things is holograms. Red Dwarf, Voyager, a few other sci-fi things. Holograms are my jam. And if you're going to reference Voyager, there's this Voyager J, Janeway J. One of the things Voyager did was develop holograms to be more than just a sci-fi gimmick. They explored the aspect of what is it to be human with the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And they had many great hologram-related technical advancements to show you in the future holograms are kind of valued. They have emitters that let them walk around. And at the end of Voyager, the Doctor was on his way to give holograms their rights. You cut forward to the future, and holograms now, even in this episode, they say, oh, they've advanced quite a lot since your time, which isn't even true, because in the timeline of Discovery, holograms seem more advanced than they are in this. But for us, the viewer, this is the most dumbed-down version of this idea we've ever seen in Star Trek. The holograms are beyond belief stupid. They've got these artificial voices. They've got the IQ of children. They are obviously fake, and they get killed by blinking too fast.
Blinking at a specific rate.
Yeah, who cares? It's still blinking.
It has to be a specific pace of too fast.
Yes, and that's the thing. They want you to follow that carrot of the reference of Voyager, but not all the time, because if you remember Voyager and you see this hologram scene, you would be insulted, because this isn't what holograms are. They've never been like this. This is the dumbest version of holograms we've ever seen in the show, and they didn't even get rights, and it looks like they've been dumbed down over the centuries. It's just insulting.
Silly Ryan, it's all okay, and you know why?
Because Georgiou's smart and evil, and you can tell this because she blinks holograms to death.
But, Ryan, it's all okay. Because Eli gets to tell us that Michael's prone to emotional outbursts.
Oh, the lampshading again. Yes, yes, the writers, we get it. You're aware of the problems of your characters too. Are you going to improve upon it? Are you actually going to explore it in any meaningful manner? Or are you just going to constantly keep pointing at it and saying, we notice too as writers, fucking fix it. Or fucking improve upon it. Fucking do something other than just keep pointing at it. That isn't anything.
Your limbic system's been getting quite a workout, Commander. Are you prone to emotional exaggeration? Our AIs have evolved quite a bit since your day.
The dumbest moment in Star Trek Discovery's entire run, outside of the yum-yum moment, is Georgiou blinking the holograms to death.
Yes, but you know, David Cronenberg's there and he explains why he's wearing glasses.
Famous director David Cronenberg's in this fucking show for some reason.
And
he should be fucking ashamed of himself.
He fetishizes an Asian woman and she's fine with
it. Oh, she likes it though.
And that has no hysterical.
The guy made The Fucking
issues?
Fly, one of the most beloved sci-fi horror movies ever made, and he's in this? Oh, no. I actually get why he's in this. Now, this show's a fucking sci-fi horror for sure.
You jerk.
Am I wrong?
No!
Georgiou blinks the holograms to death. It's stupid. It's a slap in the face to anyone who's had investment in holograms in the world of Star Trek, especially if you liked Voyager. The reasons why it's stupid is, one, when you watch the scene, it's just stupid. They play it for comedy and they play it to make Georgiou look smart, but you can't help but look at it and go, this looks awkward and it's very weird. But it's stupid for the numerous reasons of she's from the past in an alternative universe, yet somehow this trick she managed to pull on holograms that somehow was an issue that they had 930 years ago, and I guess 930 years in the Mirrorverse as well, manages to still work 930 years and in a different universe later, i.e. holograms have had the same technical issue for 930 years. Like, the technology has not advanced in that way, which is not how tech works, by the way. It's constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly upgrading. You can tell because they have detached nacelles.
I have a patch for that.
Do you need to patch it? Just say the writers did a silly job. That's the patch.
No, I guess not.
That's the patch because... Because she says, you need to update, you need to go to better software or hardware or whatever. Yeah, it's stupid. And then, of course, if you can blink holograms to death, one, I don't believe that you could blink holograms to death. It's just dumb. But if you could blink them to death, then why, and if this is a known issue, then why would you ever put them in emergency situations at all? If you can accidentally, if you have a seizure... and you accidentally blink in the right way, you could kill the doctor that's saving your life. It's stupid.
Blinking at their harmonic rate disrupts the holo protocols, creating a reference loop that shuts them down. Upgrade your programs and stop wasting my time.
Our AIs have evolved quite a bit since your day.
They have a whole sequence that reminds me of Red Dwarf. To go back to holograms, our crew are being debriefed by Starfleet about all the events, and it's very reminiscent of later seasons of Red Dwarf in which the crew come back to life and they interrogate one of the characters, Crichton the android, about what's happened, and he tells them the event of the show, and it's very hilarious and nonsensical to the other person, but to us, the audience, we know because we've watched the show, and it's very, very funny. And they do that exact sequence here in this episode where all of our different characters are, like, saying things,
oh,
and we understand the context,
Jeff
but they
Reno,
don't.
She wants snacks. And then
she's hilarious, isn't she?
Because she had some kind of beetroot corn chip or something.
that wacky
but
Jet Reno.
Ryan, she doesn't know that it's made of shit.
Not yet. Oh, fuck. I forgot about that, actually.
Yay! I got something.
Did you find it funny?
No.
Why? The whole sequence has the comedy music and the comedy cuts and the zhushing of the camera to do comedic effect, and the characters are saying wacky things.
Because it was so stupid.
What about it was so stupid that it became not funny? Because you have enjoyed so stupid that it is funny.
It didn't cross the line into me laughing at it. It was trying so hard to make me laugh that it just annoyed me, but not to the point where I started laughing at its miserable attempts to be funny.
I didn't find it funny in a way that I don't find Star Trek Discovery funny ever, in a way of this episode had set up that the Starfleet is a real force. Like, yes, they're crippled, but they're standing here criticizing...
They still have their principles.
They still have their principles, and they're standing here criticizing the Discovery crew in a manner. They're analyzing them, they're reviewing them, they're debriefing them.
Because and it's they all are very technically criminals.
And it's all very treated very serious and above board, and you have Admiral Vance, and he's playing it straight, as is his... chief, you know, whatever her name was, and you had Michael and Saru, they're playing it straight. It's all being played straight, in which we expect we come back to Starfleet and HQ and they're going to welcome us with open arms, but in fact they're holding their arms close to their chest and looking at us up and down like we're strangers and they don't know our motives. But then you have the debrief scene and it's treated like a comedy, wacky, funny scene. And that's what I don't get about Discovery. I'm not saying you can't have humor in Star Trek or moments of levity, but choose a fucking tone. Because every episode of Discovery wants every one of them. We want to have all the jokes. We want to have all the heartbreaking scenes and the monologues and drama and fight.
Because that stuff is all spectacle.
It's all, no, and trying to appeal to everyone.
On that wide journey, because,
yeah.
Oh my God, isn't it amazing that it made us feel this way in this scene, and then it flipped it round and gave us this, and oh my God, it's such a journey of emotion.
That comedy scene worked in Red Dwarf, because that episode in Red Dwarf is inherently a comedy. In episodes of Voyager or TNG or so on and so forth, in which they have silly things going on purpose, sometimes you have ironically silly things, but when you have silly things going on, like a Q episode, they're funny. The whole episode is treated like it's funny. But could you imagine if you had Measure
Maybe
of a
not
Man?
The pilot.
No, well, no, that is funny. but if you had Measure of a Man, where it's played completely straight, and then you had like a wacky comedy set piece scene in which Data is being debriefed about his events from like events from his perspective, and it would feel weird because the episode's been serious, and that's what this has been. Although we've had silly moments like, ooh, it's a rainforest ship, Starfleet was treated seriously, and then you have this debriefing scene, and it's a piss take. And it's like, yeah, but it goes, again, it goes against what the episode was being, because the writers wanted to make us laugh in this moment, because we've got to hit the laughs, we've got to hit the action, we've got to hit the science mumbo jumbo, we've got to hit the faith, we've got to hit the tears, we've got to hit it all, instead of just having an episode that's concise and to the point and has a tone of its own. This is a horror episode, this is an emotional episode, this is a thinking episode, this is a funny episode. No, all of those things are in every single episode, and it becomes tiring.
And none of these things are new problems that we're finding with this episode. It's just the way that Discovery is, and it's not a structure or a logic that we appreciate.
And can you tell me when you were created? Can you remember?
2340, sir.
Very good. 2340. Now that's in the future, isn't it?
Yes, sir. I was created after you died.
Lovely. So, I died, and you were created. And how long would you say I've been dead altogether?
Oh, you're not dead anymore, sir.
Aren't I?
No, you're alive again now, sir. Can't you tell?
Vance is an interesting character because he comes in and he's very even and level-headed and rational,
and
he says
all
of these
that?
Justifiable things to Saru and Michael. He's like, I don't know you,
and
I don't trust you,
text,
you have this piece of tech that no one's ever heard of,
the
you
text
say these
of
things.
Him and his dialogue and his performance, all very logical. But then the editing comes in.
Well, it's the way everything's framed, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's mainly with the editing in terms of the camera angles.
Oh, yeah, the direction.
Would you like to go over the camera angles first?
Well, they do the camera angles of villain and hero, where the camera is pointed down, like pointed up at him to show that he's dominant and powerful, and pointed downwards at Michael to show that she's weak and vulnerable. And then when things are changing, the camera changes like when Michael's kind of standing her ground, the camera's pointed up at her now and it's pointed down at him. It's very manipulative.
And they do a similar thing with the lighting as well.
Of it's like harsher on him.
Harsher on him, and his face is more in shadow, whereas they are more vibrant and under quite literally the spotlight.
Yeah, pretty much.
At multiple points in the episode. And
the music.
And the music.
He
is a villain. Don't trust him.
Well, at least what he's saying is unreasonable. Like the musical stings of da 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 type of music in which he's saying, look, I'm going to have to board your ship, read all the data, read your logs, examine the spore driver technology, and the music's treating it like this is the most unreasonable thing anyone could ever say. And I'm sitting here going, no, it's very obvious. The fact that the crew didn't think this would happen is, in fact, very shocking because they treat it like it's a shock.
They never considered that they would be reassigned to a different ship.
Well, they never considered that the Discovery would be taken in with an air of caution, especially when they know that
they mention trying to duplicate the spore drive.
And they're shocked. They're like, what? And it's bizarre.
Our crew is a family. Actually, I don't think that they use that line.
And this goes, again, it ties into the issue that we're having with this episode a lot.
They breathe as one.
But this ties into the issue we're having a lot with this episode, is it goes against what makes logical sense for the thing that makes what the writers want, which is this emotional reaction. It would make sense if our crew of smart scientist people who know that the Federation and Starfleet are practically dead from the burn and come to them with this advanced piece of technology that practically solves the issue that the burn has caused, which is travel. And they're shocked to find out that the crippled Federation and Starfleet wants the tech and wants to examine them. But more importantly, they're shocked that they treat them with an air of caution because they don't know them, they can't trust them, and it's like, yeah, completely
fair. We have
fair.
No records of this.
But they want that emotion. They want the shots of Michael reacting very annoyed and very shocked, and her standing her ground and speaking back to the Admiral, and they want you, the audience, to go, fuck yeah, Michael, stand up to the mean authority man. Yet it's weird because in the episode, his performance and the writing and what we see of him throughout the season, he's not a villain. He's not an evil admiral. He's just a reasonable man asking for things reasonably and doing it within his authority. And for some reason, they frame him like a villain in this manner with the camera shots, the music, the way that Michael stands up to him, the way that we're always played to root for Michael and Saru in situations like this. There's never those moments in which you go, huh, maybe the other person has a point. Or, you know what? Maybe our heroes are the ones in the wrong here. Or maybe this. No, no, no. The cards are always stacked against anyone else in the scene. It's always in favor of our heroes. There's no room for negotiation. There's no wiggle room. The Admiral Vance character is treated like an unreasonable man because he is not the hero.
We put Vance in a very difficult position right from the beginning. He has to be cautious because he is in charge of holding what's left of the Federation together. And if he makes the wrong call, everything could get worse than it already is. And he can't risk that.
We've got to talk about it. The show stops being about the Starfleet side of things and starts being about...
Oh, you mean we're ready for the Nanda?
Nandos. It becomes a Nan episode in the back half in which they have to find this seed ship.
But they do try and set it up because in that first half we get a few extra cover shots of Nan and she gets a couple of lines of dialogue to remind us that she's a character. She's part of the bridge crew and she gets to react to spaceships as well.
We named our show after a line of dialogue Nan said, and we talked about this in the Arium episode. Although they pissed away Arium and they killed her, I could at least say there was something to work with there that could have been a character. I even said they should have had a short trek. We've had Nan for a whole season. She's been important to plot lines. She helped fight the lead bad guy. She said yum yum for fuck's sake.
And killed Arium.
She killed Arium. But I could not even tell you at the end of this episode if Narn had any potential to be a good character or not. Arium had potential. I could see what could have been done there, and I saw the glimmer of why you could be emotionally manipulated for when she died. But here, when Narn just leaves at the end, I'm completely indifferent, because this is a woman who, for several episodes, didn't even get a name, and then several episodes in, had to introduce herself, yet it made no sense because she would have been serving with the Discovery crew for weeks on end at that point, but then the writers realized they didn't tell us, the audience, her name. This is a character that's just been there, and now she has to leave. What do you think? Do you think there was ever a hope for this moment actually being effective?
Can I annoy you and just say what immediately came to my mind as my first reaction?
Sure.
No, there's no good characters in Discovery.
Well, what about Prime Lorca? He's going to come in and save the whole show with his amazing character.
Hasn't happened yet.
Rachel, you don't think there's any good characters, but that's different now. Now you don't think there's any good characters, but they were good enough at some point in the journey. But was Narn...
Thus, we had our whole arc with Tilly and Stamets.
Yeah, and even with Saru, we've enjoyed him.
Yeah.
We enjoyed Lorca. There have been good characters, and whether or not they've been fulfilled or not, but Narn, was she ever a good character? And if so, if not, could you have gone over this line of her farewell in a way that was satisfying?
Yeah. But there are too many things that you would have to change to make that happen.
The biggest one that would have to be changed is what they did in the Arium episode.
Yeah.
The episode is about them. That Arium episode still had some problems where it was still about the other things, but at the beginning, you knew, oh, Arium's going to be a focus of this. But in this episode, in the final 5 minutes, you're like, oh, Narn is going to be the focus of this? I don't even know who she is.
Because they bring up that it's Barzans that are on the ship and...
who we have no attachment to as a culture.
I thought their home video was cute.
Oh, the hologram?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we have an attachment.
That was sweet, and I liked the idea of her feeling a draw to go back to her culture. And that is only because of stuff that's been going on with my family at the moment that makes me wish that I could be with them a little bit more.
Yeah.
And thus it's hit an emotional chord with me because of what's going on with me.
But not because of the episode actually delivering it on its own.
No, it's nothing to do with the episode. It is just, oh, there's a family. Oh, I miss my family. And then I just started thinking about my own shit and not paying attention to the episode.
Talking about that experience that you've got there, let's do the Hugh-dah. We've often complained that Hugh is getting nothing to do and this, and we often find it hard to connect with Hugh and how he is a form of representation, because we always think, wouldn't it be great if he was more than just the token representation but actually had a full-fledged character?
Yeah.
But you just talked about how the Narn story did affect you emotionally in some minute way because you have a real life experience going on in which you miss your family and you want to be close to them and you want to reconnect and all that. But the show doesn't earn it because it doesn't do it on its own, but it still affected you.
Yeah.
Isn't that what Hugh is for a whole plethora of people?
Absolutely.
And we've struggled with, is that enough? And season 3 seems to say, no, that's not enough, actually. Let's give him stuff to do.
He's going to have a log. He's going to be on an away mission. He goes on several this season.
What did you think of Hugh in this episode?
He was fine. He was his usual level of Hugh, mostly smiling and nodding and
being sassy.
Yeah, being a little bit sassy. And also in these last two episodes, a new trait that he seems to have picked up is shoving Michael into the middle of everything, because she's trying to take on less responsibility and have less of a god complex.
And he's like, hey, do you not know you're the main character?
Yeah. It's like, okay, you go.
It can't be me.
No, I can't do this. You have to do this.
I can't.
You have to.
I love in a little way. It doesn't say it specifically in that scene, but in the episode, it kind of is like, Michael, Nan can't communicate to this guy because he's from the same culture as her and she doesn't have enough of a detached perspective. I don't give a fuck about their culture, so I can't help because I actively have disdain for it. But you're indifferent. You go in.
Also,
like it subtly says that because throughout the episode, he kind of shows a bit of I don't get it.
Like
attitude.
Nan says, we have a different understanding of life and death.
Yeah.
Which has always been in various plots of Star Trek and something that's a really interesting ethical and philosophical question to explore like, what does life mean? What does death mean? And what is the perspective on those two things? And what does it mean when life has ended? And at what point can you say that somebody is dead?
Mm.
And they kind of bring up those ideas in that one line.
Mm.
And then they do explain 0% of what Abazan's understanding of death is and how he can construe that his family is still alive when they have zero flatline life signs.
I really enjoyed Hugh in this episode in terms of I finally got an understanding of what he is as a doctor character. We've been saying counselor character, but this episode did a really great job of establishing that he is a guy of cold, hard science. And he is similar to Beverly Crusher in a way or two, in terms of when faced with someone about to die, and one of the reasons that death is happening right now, or danger is happening right now, is because of their culture. He will go above and beyond their culture and say, No. Like, Worf in Ethics with Beverly Crusher, she's like, suicide isn't the option, Worf. That's stupid. No. I don't really care about your Klingon beliefs. I'm going to try and save you with whatever I can do. He has a similar thing here in which it's like, look, I don't know the Barzan culture. I think that this is more important. We can't let this guy just let himself get irradiated and die. That's, like, horrible and inhumane.
But
and she's like, inhumane,
even,
exactly.
It's not even made to be about him.
No.
It's about the fact that they need him to access the seeds so that they can save the other people.
Yeah. But even then, after that, he is like, well, let's beam you up to the ship. And he's like, no, I'm going to stay with my family and die. And that's where Hugh comes in and says, I don't understand that cultural perspective. What I understand is medicine. And what my job as a medical professional and as a doctor is to save your life.
I didn't think about that.
And I really thought, far out, this is great. Hugh is the kind of guy who isn't swayed by culture or spiritual belief systems to get in the way of his medical professional opinion. But then the episode countered that by one of the dumbest moments that he's ever had in an episode, which is Nan says in a very Star Trek fashion that the guy on the seed ship had grown all these plants and stuff in the foolish hopes of trying to synthesize a cure and save his family.
I think
and
you
that's
mean
when
a miracle.
And Hugh says, I think you mean a miracle.
I think you mean a miracle.
And it really went against his character of this episode as a guy who's a cold, hard science to then come in with the Star Trek Discovery thing of faith, spirits,
and
destiny.
It's
like, it
from
doesn't
a different character. from a different character.
Or if his character was positioned in a different way.
That line of him saying miracle would play very differently.
But the way he delivers it.
Out of context, when people, like, non-religious, non-faith-associated people that aren't particularly spiritual.
Would say
if
that
they
too.
Say, oh, that would be a miracle. It's just, well, that's beyond ridiculous and impossible.
Yeah, but...
But because of what Hugh has experienced...
And because of what Star Trek Discovery does all the time when it comes to faith and spirituality...
That is not the way that we interpret him meaning that word.
Or the show.
Or the show. So it makes it a very odd thing. Like, if you think about it... From the character's perspective, that line doesn't really make sense.
Or it doesn't feel true.
If you just assume that an average viewer watching it puts themselves in Hugh's perspective, then that line of dialogue makes sense. But if you actually view it from Hugh...
Yeah.
And from the world within the show...
And this episode.
Within the immersion that the show... ideally would have you in, it doesn't sit right for me.
He broke open the seed vault trying to grow it. A cure.
I think you mean a miracle.
Although Hugh has a character now, or characterization that's identifiable to us after three whole seasons, I'm still very disappointed that his character is not allowed to actually fulfill or propel or conclude plots. He is there to point that they are there, but he is not allowed to do anything. He is just supposed to say, you, Michael, are the main character, you do it. I had a huge laugh, probably the biggest laugh I've had in quite some time, and it wasn't one designed by the show to be funny, which is, Hugh gives his medical perspective on the issue. He says, this is the procedure, this is what we do, this. But it goes against what Michael wants to do. But she can't refute it, because she's being a Starfleet officer. She needs to abide by his medical perspective, but she knows that it's not right for the guy, but she has no grounds to say that. Yeah. So what does she do? She just says, thanks, Hugh. You're not... Get back on the ship.
Just fuck off.
And it's a very... And it made me laugh because it's such a Star Trek Discovery way of handling the approach, which is you have someone there giving their logical, professional perspective on the matter, and if it goes against the other person's, the other person just says, okay, go away now because I don't need that perspective. Instead of discussing it, countering it, inquiring more about it, getting a new perspective from that founded one that they just got. No, it's just, okay, Hugh, you know what? You're not needed here. Go back on the ship so that I can do what I want to do. It's almost as if, why did you even waste the time making him say that if you weren't actually going to build upon it? Yeah. It is there so that we can say it was nice that Hugh had some minor characterization and had a voice in this episode. But if the voice isn't adding to anything, then it is just noise.
There is a line that Michael has in that scene, and I'm pretty sure it's after she's told Hugh to fuck off. And in my head, I was just like, wow, this line could have been a really interesting centerpiece for a conversation of, like, Hugh discussing with Nan, like, the reasons that she should or shouldn't stay. And, like, abandoning her post and those sorts of things that Michael goes through, which is the line is, sometimes there is no good choice, just the one you can live with.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for Michael too, with, like,
what she's currently going through.
And the lessons that she was forced to learn in her year alone. Oh,
that
in
magical
the future.
Year. Yeah. That magical year that we never get to see.
It could have been really interesting to have that conversation between Nan and Hugh and him reflecting more on the ongoing consequences of his decision to break up with Paul, when he came back and questioning whether Nan is uncertain of her decision to be in the future, and that is why she's walking away from the thing that she knew.
Yeah.
To go back to what she knows at her heart and is at her childhood.
That whole thing just was like a strike of lightning to my brain. One of the issues that we've had with this season is that Saru gets kicked off the chair and Michael's put on.
Yeah.
And this episode kind of reinforces that by, at the end, Saru says to her basically, hey, next time you talk to the Admiral, be proper. And it ties into that conflict that you've just said. Michael is the person who says, I don't care about making the right choices. I care about making the choices that I can live with. And Saru is the guy who's like, no, there are right choices,
by
the way.
There is always a right choice in every situation. But there's always a choice that you should uphold
and there's a good,
for
there's,
your principles, you which is also what Saru says to Michael at another point in this episode.
But here's the thing. The show says by the end of the season, and in this episode, because Michael is rewarded with her actions, and at the end she's rewarded, that Saru is wrong and Michael is right. Saru's perspective of, no, Michael, not every choice is one that you just go, there is no right choice, it's only one I can live with. His perspective is, no, think carefully, think precisely, and actually think of others around you. But this episode, again, shows you it. Hugh has the same perspective as Saru, where he's like, this is it. But Michael says, no, my way. And the episode rewards her. And so does the season in the end. And what you just said there about that quote, yeah. You can say that this is kind of the best season for Michael characterization-wise because they are sowing these seeds through, but are they ones that I want to see grow into anything? No, not really.
He's still trying to save them. That's what all these plants are about.
I give this episode a yum.
Yum.
I did not enjoy it, and they got rid of Nan, so the whole point of us being the Yum Yum podcast is now null and void because Yum Yum is no longer here. In fact,
Yum Yum is no longer here, but the essence of Yum Yum is still present.
With us. We bring the Yum Yum. We bring the Yum Yum. I guess that's, yeah, you know what? Now that you've said that, I've changed my mind, Rachel. I give this episode 2 yums because I really didn't enjoy it.
Yum Yum.
Double no.
You can't give it a double no.
A double bad.
No.
When did we ever say we couldn't? Exactly. I'm giving it a yum and then another yum to add to the fact that I'm pretty sure at some point,
because we have said...
I really didn't enjoy this episode. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, this isn't as bad as People of Earth. I think that's the worst episode of Discovery. But this is definitely near the Wolf Inside level of bad to me. I really did not enjoy myself with this. It's not as if it had truly morally offensive things to me, but it did offend me in lots of ways. The way that they framed one side against the other, the way that they didn't show us things, and like we said, like, everyone has a perspective to offer, but none of them are valid because they're not the protagonist, and that is just... Yum.
Yum. So I'm struggling a little bit because I did not dislike it as much as you did. And it doesn't meet my primary requirement of getting a yum, which is that it didn't make me very angry.
Mm.
It didn't even fully make me disappointed because these are all things that I expect from Star Trek Discovery now.
Mm.
But it was so stupid and idiotic in layers and layers of meaning and decisions and protocols and processes and cost so much fucking money to make.
Mm.
So it meets the second criteria of it was so fucking stupid, it has to be a yum.
Yum. Although I have a real disdain for this episode, and I think it is definitely my top 3 or top 4 bad episodes, It's very similar to last season's Light and Shadows, where that was my least favourite of the season, but as time marches on, when this episode's released, by the time we do our season recap, I will not even remember much about the episode as to why I didn't like it as much as I currently do. But that's the thing. Is aggravation worse than apathy? People of Earth gave me aggravation, and to the point in which it is my least favorite episode. But episodes like this, in which they will leave me with complete apathy and I will not remember them, there is something to be said about episodes like this in terms of, is it worse than an episode that leaves you angry?
Yeah.
It's the constant debate, the constant back and forth. Aggravation or apathy? Which is the worst type of episode? Rachel, what is the next episode of Star Trek Discovery we will be covering? I hope that we've moved on from the best rated episode of season 3 to the better rated episode of season 3. Because really, if Die Trying is considered to be the best episode of season 3, I don't know. I think that means that every episode will be a significant step down from here on out. The fact that the second episode isn't considered better than this one is a shock to me. Hopefully the next episode we have isn't like a terrible one, isn't one in which we're just going to be stuck in a quarry. I really hate those quarry episodes.
It is entitled Scavengers, Season 3, Episode 6. After receiving a message from Book, Burnham and Giorgio embark on a rogue mission to find him, leaving Saru to pick up the pieces with Admiral Vance. Meanwhile, Stamets forms an unexpected bond with Adira.
Oh, remember Adira?
She is in this episode.
Well, they were here. They gave lines of dialogue. I wouldn't say they were a character.
They get confused
with
for Admiral Tal.
Senatal, yeah. So Scavengers, one of the lowest rated episodes of season 3, and one that, oh fuck, this is the one with Book in the quarry with the Andorian. Fuck, this is a quarry episode. Boy, do they love those quarries and rocky locations.
Yep. Just a big CGI slave camp.
With a brown filter. If people out there want to follow us on those social medias and interact with us, we are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. All of this is in the description. We have an email in which you can talk to us further, send us your thoughts, questions, queries and concerns, corrections perhaps, maybe erotica. yumyumpod@gmail.com. We have our Patreon as well, Rachel. What do we do over on the Yum Yum Pod Patreon?
We give you extra stuff to listen to, including broadly our thoughts on general pieces of media, usually TV shows, such as Red Dwarf, which got a number of mentions in
this episode.
Yeah. We also discuss the best and worst rated episodes of the rest of Star Trek.
Yep.
And we even discuss the Star Trek movies, because there are ones too.
Yep, so look us up on the Patreon, Yum Yum Podcast. All of this stuff, again, is in the description of this episode. Feel free to rate and review us on whatever podcatcher you use. It is always greatly appreciated. Give us a yum yum on those, or as people call them, a 5-star. Rachel, this was an experience talking to you about Star Trek Discovery, but I think that we have to end this episode like the Starfleet officers we were born to be, which is to speak back to one another until one of us just says, shit, could you shut the fuck up and leave me the fuck alone?
Sorry, it's coded into my genome.